Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Trish reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, June 23rd, 2020. Coronavirus. Midland Health Department reports 95 new cases. Number of Midland County residents who tested positive for coronavirus is at 417. From staff reports, the number of confirmed coronavirus cases increased by 95 on Monday. That number not only nearly tripled the previous high mark, 35, but it was more than any week except for last week. The total also appeared to send a message to Midland's younger residents that the virus will not have any problems spreading. The 20-somethings again had the most over the weekend at 35, but every age range below 70 recorded double-digit COVID totals. Those 0 to 19 years old were 14 cases, 30 to 39-year-olds 12, 40 to 49 10, 50 to 59 13, and 60 to 69 11. There were no cases in the 70 to 79 age range among those 80 and older. The confirmed cases seem to be at home isolating because that total jumped from 179 to 272, according to the health department. The number of residents who have recovered was up to 114. Midland County residents in the hospital increased by only one from Friday to Monday. Midland Health Department officials also reported that community transmission was the number one source of exposure of those testing positive over the weekend, 34. Contact to a known case was a close second with 32, and leads during an entire pandemic with 218 of the 417 testing positive. The health department noted that 64 of the cases are from the weekend, but comparing apples and apples, there were 21 new confirmed cases on June 15th. At the time, the Midland Health Department reported 93 positive tests through the first 15 days of the month. The number of confirmed tests reported Monday topped even that number. Education. MISD employee housing renovation continues by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. Midland ISD has plans to spend at least $1.307 million on renovation of employee housing for the year 2020-21. The item was on a list of expenditures of $100,000 or more approved by district leaders at their meeting on Monday. The school board approved in June 2019 the purchase of two apartment complexes to be used for teacher and staff housing. The district negotiated with the owners of Simpatico Apartments located at 2910 West Michigan Avenue and Town and Country Apartments located at 3310 Bedford Avenue to purchase their existing 25-unit complexes for a combined $3.2 million. The $1.307 million will be spent with SLW and Associates, a Midland company, according to its website, for property management renovation to employee housing. MISD stated Monday in an email that renovations also include its units at the Stonegate Modular Housing Community. Simpatico and Town & Country are undergoing major renovations, which will happen unit by unit as tenants move out, MISD said. Each apartment unit will receive new flooring, paint, blinds, sinks, countertops, plumbing, HVAC, and appliances. Simpatico and Town & Country each have 25 units. Major siding replacements will be made at Simpatico, and both Simpatico and Town & Country will receive external painting as well as new security, safety gating, and fencing. Simpatico's pool will be removed and replaced with a play area for children. Town & Country will receive repairs to its pool. Both Simpatico and Town & Country have had asphalt replacements, and the district is looking at landscaping replacements at each facility according to the district. The district's modular homes will receive annual maintenance as well as new skirting. These renovations are ongoing, and the budgeted cost is $1.307 million, MISD reported. MISD payments to apartment companies. The list of estimated expenditures over $100,000 for the 2020-21 school year also included three different payments made to apartment complexes. They include $132,250 to the Palms at Briarwood Apartment Homes for teacher staff housing leases, $204,509 to the La Mirage Apartment Homes for teacher staff housing leases, and $106,118.66 to Wildflower Apartment Homes for teacher staff housing leases. The district told the Reporter-Telegram on Monday that Midland ISD handles only the processing of payments between their employees and apartment complexes because of a discount program in place. Therefore, it requires a vendor account with the district. All of the properties listed in this question and included on the board document are apartment complexes owned and operated by Widener Properties, according to an email from the district's communications office. Midland ISD, Widener Properties, and the Permian Strategic Partnership entered into a joint agreement to offer discounts to teachers moving into the district. Midland ISD teachers select an apartment at one of Widener's many complexes throughout Midland and Odessa, and their monthly rent and utilities are deducted from their paycheck and paid directly to these properties. This is a very successful program with about 60 teachers participating in it this first year. Widener Properties has waived many of the upfront costs for those teachers participating in the program, allowing new teachers to move into the district and start their job without the prohibitive initial cost that prevented many teachers from joining the district because of the high cost of living. MISD does not provide any of these discounts. The discounts are funded by Widener and the Permian Strategic Partnership, the PSP. Midland ISD only handles the processing of payments, which requires a vendor account with the district. $1 million contracts. Also on Monday, trustees voted on contracts of more than $1 million. U.S. Bank National Association, $19.34 million for bond payments. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Texas, $18,765,000 for employee insurance. ESS South Central LLC, $6 million for temporary staffing services, substitute teaching. Reliant, $3.7 million for electricity. Midland Central Appraisal District, $3 million for yearly appraisal fees. Labatt Food Service, $2.771 million for CNS food items. Thomas Bus Gulf Coast, $2.5 million, 10 to 78 passenger buses and 5 activity buses. City of Midland, $1.7 for water bill. Higginbotham Insurance Agency, $1.431 million for property insurance. CDW Government LLC, $1.452 million for computers, supplies, and Microsoft renewals. SLW and Associates, $1.307 million for property management and renovation to employee housing. Wells Fargo Bank, $1.2 million for credit card services. Stealth Partner Group, $1.1 million for stop loss insurance. Commissioner's Court, County Attorney, Horseshoe made gratuitous grants. Public funds cannot be used for incentive payments, Malm says, by Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. After a report from the Midland County Auditor's Office found Horseshoe Hospitality used public funds to offer incentives to private promoters, County Attorney Russell Malm said Monday the payments are legally considered gratuitous grants and are not permitted to be made with county money. Malm offered his opinion on the payments during Monday's Commissioner's Court meeting. In an interview, he said he was not suggesting Horseshoe Hospitality had intentionally misused public funds, and said the management company was likely unaware they had done so before the county audit. In a report provided to the Reporter-Telegram 2 weeks ago, the auditor's office found Horseshoe Hospitality had used $10,000 in county funds to incentivize promoters to hold events at the Horseshoe Complex. Half of the funds were used to pay for a performer's lights and sound, and the other half was given to a promoter to cover marketing expenses, according to the report. The funds used were from an account paid for by the county. Midland County provided $3.7 million to Horseshoe Hospitality for operational expenses, marketing expenses, and capital projects in the 2019 fiscal year, County Auditor Veronica Morales said during Monday's meeting. Under the Texas Constitution, payments made to an individual, association, or corporation using public funds are considered gratuitous grants and not allowed, Malm said. He said the only exception is when the funds are used for a legitimate public purpose, and there is a three-part test to determine if a grant meets that criteria. 1. The predominant purpose of the grant must be to accomplish a public purpose for the county, not to benefit private parties. 2. The county must have maintained control over the funds to ensure they were used for a public purpose, usually through written contract. 3. The county must have received a return benefit. Malm said any use of county funds for grants must be approved by the commissioner's court. He said the incentive payments made by Horseshoe Hospitality would not meet the criteria to be considered a public purpose. Joe Kelly, president of Horseshoe Hospitality, previously told the Reporter-Telegram the incentive payments weren't a secret. During Monday's meeting, Kelly said $40,000 had been approved in the 2019 budget for incentives for 8 shows, with an estimate that $5,000 would be spent for each show. Now that the commissioner's court is aware county funds are being used for incentive payments, it would need to be addressed before the court approves the 2021 fiscal year budget in October, Malm said. He said the county could amend the contract with Horseshoe Hospitality to specify public funds could not be used in that way. Business. Costco, continuing with land acquisition in Midland by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstNP.com. Costco Wholesale is still in the process of purchasing land in West Midland that will be its first club in the Permian Basin. The Midland City Council will vote today on an extension of a Chapter 380 agreement with Costco approved in December that will refund a portion of the sales tax generated from the development of the store at the intersection of State Highways 191 and 158. According to a council agenda packet document, under the original agreement, the property acquisition date was to be no later than June 30th. As the project was being finalized, there were a number of factors affecting the start date that forced Costco to renegotiate their contract for purchase with the property owner. The city reports that the revised closing date was moved to October. Costco is asking that the city revise the acquisition date to October 30th on the economic development agreement. Costco's 36.8-acre development, according to the agreement, will include no more than $7 million in public improvements, including local streets, state highway improvements, traffic signals, and utility extensions, according to the city. Officials expect that the development will increase ad valorem taxes and sales taxes to the city. In consideration of this development, Costco is requesting a Chapter 380 agreement that will refund a portion of sales tax generated from the development. The city reports on its council agenda. The agreement calls for a termination date of either 15 years, the receipt of $7 million in Chapter 380 payments, or the termination of the agreement. DPS. Man dies in two-vehicle wreck, from staff reports. A 37-year-old Midland man died Friday afternoon in a two-vehicle crash on Farm to Market Road 307, according to a press release from the Texas Department of Public Safety. Kevin W. Holcomb was driving a Kia Optima eastbound on FM 307, and a Ford F-250 was westbound in the center turn lane. The pickup driver, a 36-year-old Midland man, failed to yield the right-of-way and hit the car, according to the release. Holcomb, who was not wearing a seatbelt, died at the scene. The pickup driver was not injured. The wreck occurred at 4:30 p.m. Friday, 1 mile east of Midland. The wreck is still under investigation, a DPS spokesman told the Reporter-Telegram. Holcomb is the 13th person to die in wrecks on roads in Midland County this year. According to the Reporter Telegram records, the last fatal wreck occurred on April 16th when a man in a wheelchair died after being hit by an SUV as he was crossing in the 700 block of East Florida Avenue, but was not in a crosswalk, according to a previous article. Obituaries and death notices for June 23rd, 2020. Mary Natalie Holmes. Mary Natalie Holmes, 86, passed away peacefully on Saturday, June 13th, 2020, in Midland, Texas. A graveside service will be held on Thursday, June 25th, 2020, at Rest Haven Cemetery at 11 a.m. She was born on March 25th in Abilene, Texas. Shortly after she started talking, she strongly expressed to anyone who would listen to not call her Mary. She would forever and only go by Natalie. Natalie is preceded in death by her father in 1962, her husband of nearly 47 years, George, in 2010, and brother Hubert Duane Toll in 2017. She is survived by her four sons, Nick of Benbrook, Wayne of Round Rock, Robert and John Corey, both of Midland, and five grandchildren, Nikki Holmes of Austin, Kristen Rasko and John Corey Holmes, Jr., both of Midland, Colton Decker of Round Rock, and Logan Holmes of Georgetown. Natalie loved pink and she loved flowers. Flowers can be sent to Rest Haven Cemetery in Midland. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to the Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Home. There is no email address. Rex Wilkes. Memorial services for Rex Wilkes of Brownfield, Texas will be held on Tuesday, June 23rd, 2020 at 2 p.m. at First United Methodist Church with Reverend Ruby Moultrie officiating. He was received unto the Lord Thursday, June 18th, 2020. He's survived by his wife, Charlotte Hurd, H-U-R-D, and they were married on March 18, 1961. Rex and Charlotte had three sons and a daughter, Mark, Brent, deceased in 2014, Mont, and Rexanne. In addition to their spouses, Rex leaves behind his son, Rex Lee Wilkes of Kentucky, his close nephew, John Fane Wilkes, and his family, 13 grandchildren and 8 great-grandchildren. Rex was a 32nd degree Mason, and he passed away at the home in Buffalo Lakes. There is no information about the funeral home. Death notices. Andres Torres. Andres Torres passed away June 20th, 2020. Visitation will be held Tuesday, June 23rd. 2020 from 10 a.m. till 9. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. A funeral mass will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, June 24th, 2020 at St. Joseph's Catholic Church with Monsignor Tim Schwettner officiating. Interment will follow at St. Joseph's Catholic Cemetery. He's survived by his wife, Rosa Torres, daughter Lupe Torres, sons Juan Torres, Pedro Torres, Freddie Diaz, David Torres, Richard Torres, two sisters, and one brother. Due to COVID-19 restrictions, the services will be limited to immediate family only. Arrangements are under the direction of Stanton Memorial Funeral Home and Chapel. Jimmy D. Powell. Jimmy D. Powell, 79, of Midland, passed away June 21st, 2020. The family will receive guests from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Thursday, June 25th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, June 26th, 2020, at Westside Church of Christ, with interment following at American Heritage Cemetery. Survivors include wife Diane Powell. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Leo L. Hatfield. Leo L. Hatfield, 88, of Midland, passed away June 20th, 2020. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, June 25th at the Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, June 26th at the Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Fairview Cemetery. Margaret Ann Rice Veal. Margaret Ann Rice Veal, 93, of Midland, passed away June 19th, 2020. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, June 25th, at the Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. A graveside service will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, June 26th, at Fairview Cemetery. Survivors include children Millard Veal, Corinne McMaster, David Veal, and Sarah Meissner. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Margaret Leonard, 83, of Midland, passed away June 19, 2020. Graveside services will be at 3 p.m. Wednesday, June 24th, at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Maria de Jesus Roman. Maria de Jesus Roman, 85, of Midland, passed away on Friday, June 19th. Viewing will be Monday, June 22nd, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel. Funeral service is set for Tuesday, June 23rd at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. She is survived by a husband, Salvador Roman, daughter Sandra Roman Gamboa, three grandchildren and six great-grandchildren, with numerous nephews, nieces, and cousins. Funeral services are under the direction of Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at heavenlygatefh.com. Obituaries and death notices for June 23rd, 2020. Mary Natalie Holmes. Mary Natalie Holmes, 86, passed away peacefully on Saturday, June 13th, 2020, in Midland, Texas. A graveside service will be held on Thursday, June 25th, 2020, at Rest Haven Cemetery at 11 a.m. She was born on March 25th in Abilene, Texas. Shortly after she started talking, she strongly expressed to anyone who would listen to not call her Mary. She would forever and only go by Natalie. Natalie is preceded in death by her father in 1962, her husband of nearly 47 years, George, in 2010, and brother Hubert Duane Toll in 2017. She is survived by her four sons, Nick of Benbrook, Wayne of Round Rock, Robert and John Corey, both of Midland, and five grandchildren, Nikki Holmes of Austin, Kristen Rasko and John Corey Holmes, Jr., both of Midland, Colton Decker of Round Rock, and Logan Holmes of Georgetown. Natalie loved pink and she loved flowers. Flowers can be sent to Rest Haven Cemetery in Midland. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to the Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Home. There is no email address. Rex Wilkes. Memorial services for Rex Wilkes of Brownfield, Texas, will be held on Tuesday, June 23rd, 2020, at 2 p.m. at First United Methodist Church, with Reverend Ruby Moultrie officiating. He was received unto the Lord Thursday, June 18th, 2020. He's survived by his wife, Charlotte Hurd, H-U-R-D, and they were married on March 18, 1961. Rex and Charlotte had three sons and a daughter, Mark, Brent, deceased in 2014, Mont, and Rexanne. In addition to their spouses, Rex leaves behind his son, Rex Lee Wilkes of Kentucky, his close nephew, John Fane Wilkes, and his family, 13 grandchildren and 8 great-grandchildren. Rex was a 32nd degree Mason, and he passed away at the home in Buffalo Lakes. There is no information about the funeral home. Death notices. Andres Torres. Andres Torres passed away June 20th, 2020. Visitation will be held Tuesday, June 23rd, 2020 from 10 a.m. till 9. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. A funeral mass will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, June 24th, 2020 at St. Joseph's Catholic Church with Monsignor Tim Schwettner officiating. Interment will follow at St. Joseph's Catholic Cemetery. He's survived by his wife, Rosa Torres, daughter, Lupe Torres, sons, Juan Torres, Pedro Torres, Freddy Diaz, David Torres, Richard Torres, two sisters, and one brother. Due to COVID-19 restrictions, the services will be limited to immediate family only. Arrangements are under the direction of Stanton Memorial Funeral Home and Chapel. Jimmy D. Powell. Jimmy D. Powell, 79, of Midland, passed away June 21st, 2020. The family will receive guests from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Thursday, June 25th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, June 26th, 2020, at Westside Church of Christ, with interment following at American Heritage Cemetery. Survivors include wife Diane Powell. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Leo L. Hatfield. Leo L. Hatfield, 88, of Midland, passed away June 20th, 2020. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, June 25th, at the Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, June 26th, at the Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Fairview Cemetery. Margaret Ann Rice Veal. Margaret Ann Rice Veal, 93, of Midland, passed away June 19th, 2020. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, June 25th, at the Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. A graveside service will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, June 26th, at Fairview Cemetery. Survivors include children Millard Veal, Corinne McMaster, David Veal, and Sarah Meissner. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Margaret Leonard, 83, of Midland, passed away June 19th, 2020. Graveside services will be at 3 p.m. Wednesday, June 24th, at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Maria de Jesus Roman. Maria de Jesus Roman, 85, of Midland, passed away on Friday, June 19th. Viewing will be Monday, June 22nd, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel. Funeral service is set for Tuesday, June 23rd at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. She is survived by a husband, Salvador Roman, daughter Sandra Roman Gamboa, three grandchildren and six great-grandchildren with numerous nephews, nieces, and cousins. Funeral services are under the direction of Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at heavenlygatefh.com.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, June 23rd, 2020. Front page. Council to Amend Fencing Screening Ordinance by Michael Merlo, M-M-E-R-L-O at OAOA.com. Council members will vote on multiple items during today's council meeting, which will be held at the Odessa Marriott Hotel, including the first approval of amending an ordinance regarding the types of material city residents can use to build a fence. Odessa City Manager Michael Marrero said during last Tuesday's work session that the amendment arose after several complaints. "This is just really an attempt to strengthen our ordinances," Marrero said, adding that it would fall under the Building Inspections Department. Randy Brinley said the update to the ordinance is to address the material that can be used. "Folks out there are kind of flaunting the fence ordinance out there," he said, referencing the types of materials being used, which under the current ordinance could be classified as a fence. "Certain items or material cannot be used, such as barbed wire or razor wire in a residential area, or those same materials in a non-residential district, but that's on property that is adjacent to the residential district," he said. He also detailed a provision that fences and walls must be maintained in a safe and well-kept manner, which he said is mainly to address fences that have been run through at no fault, no cause of the owner, but need to stay under care. Marrero said that the current ordinance doesn't define material, and he wants to make sure they did in the ordinance. "You see everything from plywood. The strangest one I've ever seen is a fence made out of cars," he said. District 1 Councilman Michael K. Shelton upped the ante, saying that he's seen a fence made out of sheetrock. District 3 Councilwoman Deidre White said she's very concerned about some of the unsafe fences in her district. Marrero said that they will give people a notice of violation and a specified time frame to fix the fence. Brinley said that existing fences will be grandfathered into the ordinance, but will still have to be maintained, and once a grandfathered fence falls in disrepair, it needs to be updated to the new requirements. The council meeting will be held at 6 p.m. today at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center in the Devonian 3 and 4 rooms. Council will be meeting for a brief before the meeting at 5 p.m. in the Wolf Camp room at the Odessa Marriott. City Council will also consider a bid award for 2019 CIP water and sewer line replacements, accepting the 2019 Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, CAFR, as well as approving a community-wide program for COVID-19 testing. Council will also consider outside agency requests for funding for the fiscal year 2020-2021 budget. Other items: approval of an improvements agreement with EA Engineering Science and Technology Incorporated, PBC, EA, for the Environmental Protection Agency for the Odessa Chromium No. 1 Superfund area, and approving the utility services agreement for the Superfund impacted service area. Consider annual renewal of Motorola Premier One software for $307,308. Consider a bid award for 2019 CIP water and sewer line replacements. Review and accept the 2019 Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, CAFR. Consider approval of a community-wide program for COVID-19 testing. Open a public hearing to consider approval of the request by Investment Corporation of America, owners, to rezone Windsor Heights Addition, 6th filing, Block 55, drill site number 7, 5.27 acres, from single-family to drill reservation, SF 2DR, to Office District O, approximately 5.27 acres, Odessa, Ector County, Texas, southeast of the intersection of East 37th Street and Inglewood Lane. Open a public hearing to consider amending Chapter 14 of the City Code of Ordinances Section 14.11.1, Fences and Screening. Consider to install traffic signals. Consider outside agency requests for funding for FY 2020-21 budget. Recess for executive session to consider the evaluation of applicants for the position of Associate Municipal Court Judge, including the possible appointment of a new Associate Municipal Court Judge, as authorized by the Texas Government Code, Section 551.074. Doctor Tells Officials to Mandate by Michael Merlo, MMERLO at OAOA.com. Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Sarvanen said Monday that if cases continue to rise like they have, we will be well past our full capacity and will definitely be in our surge. The cases have about doubled this week from last, he said, with the county reporting 359 people have tested positive for COVID-19, and 337 of those cases are active. 17 patients are in Medical Center Hospital, and 9 are in the hospital at ORMC, including a person under investigation. Sarvanen said if that number of hospitalizations doubles, staffing would be an issue in the COVID-19 unit and in the ICU for ORMC. We are at that point where we might have to go out and look for contract labor, which, you know, is very expensive and hard to find at this point, he said, adding that the whole country is going through this, and he didn't know if ORMC's sister facilities could spare nurses. When a member of the media asked County Commissioner Eddie Shelton about the rise of cases and if the county would consider a mask mandate, he said that he knew other cities had them, and Sarvanen responded abruptly, saying, "Do it. I'm telling you guys as commissioners. I'm telling you guys as a city mayor, do it. Stand up and make the statement and say, we're going to mandate, even if we can't enforce it. Just mandate it, because it is the right statement to make," he said. Odessa Mayor David Turner again said that he wanted to discuss the mask mandate with Midland Mayor Patrick Payton and the Odessa City Council before he gave an answer. "I think we need to watch until the end of the week and see where we are," he said. "I think you have to look at the number of people in ICU, because if the hospitals have to go into the next step, that is certainly concerning. ICU and hospital capacity are more of the number that I'm concerned about," he said, adding that he wanted to talk to the city attorney to see who is actually responsible for a mask mandate. "If it's something that can be issued as a declaration, then we might be able to do that, but I just need to make sure. Seeing almost 100 is a little scary," he said, referencing the 3-day increase. Shelton said that he hasn't talked to Ettrick County Judge Debbie Hayes about mandating masks, and said that, "I think we're still hoping that the public will heed the warnings, hear what we're saying, and put the mask on themselves." Sarvanen referenced Governor Greg Abbott's press conference, saying that, "We are rapidly increasing across the whole state, and we need to take it more seriously than ever before." A press release by the Ettrick County Health Department detailed that from Friday after 3 p.m. to Monday before 2:30 p.m., there have been 96 new cases. There have been 359 confirmed total cases in the county, and 213 are probable. 500 tests are pending, and 228 people have recovered from the virus. 7 Ettrick County residents have died from COVID-19 complications. The health department also reported that there has been a rise in cases among the 20 to 30-year-olds, and contact tracing linked those cases to a number of businesses in Midland and Odessa that sell alcohol, but did not say what businesses in particular. The release also gave updates on local nursing homes. Focused Care at Odessa has had 14 cases, including one death. Deering's Nursing Home has had one staff member test positive, and four staff members have tested positive at Siena Nursing Home. A sixth Focused Care at Crane resident died Monday. MCH has had 208 patients test positive, and of the 17 patients in the hospital, 13 are on the designated floor, including three from Focused Care at Odessa, one from Focused Care at Crane, two transfers from Big Bend Regional, and one from Ward Memorial. MCH reported that four patients are in the critical care unit. Three are on ventilators, with one from Ward Memorial and the other being from Big Bend Regional. ORMC President Stacy Brown reported that out of 623 tests, 43 patients have tested positive, 511 have tested negative, and 69 test results are pending. She said that eight patients are in the ICU, and one is on a ventilator, and one person is under investigation. In other COVID-19 news, Representative Brooks Landgraf took some notes regarding Governor Greg Abbott's statement on the rise in COVID-19 cases throughout Texas. Brooks wrote that Abbott started the briefing reiterating that decisions about how to respond to COVID-19 are being made based on data and conversations with medical professionals. COVID-19 remains a fast-spreading virus. Texas's early efforts to limit the initial spread of COVID-19 were effective. If followed, safety protocols, personal hygiene, masks, social distancing, etc., will reduce the continued spread of the virus, and Texas has developed strategies to limit a large spread of infections without shutting the state down again, which would only be done as a last option, according to the governor. Landgraf reported that Abbott mentioned ways to combat the increase of cases by following CDC guidelines, and that certain authorities are now increasing enforcement, including the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, that has already shut down several overcrowded bars. He also wrote that the Texas National Guard and CDC are working to provide surge testing in areas that might be hotspots for the infection, and other state agencies are working with hospitals to ensure they can treat anyone who tests positive for COVID-19. Big Honors. Gillum Overwhelmed by Scholarship by Ruth Campbell, RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. The University of Texas Permian Basin has surprised one of the town's main proponents of public art and a university benefactor with the revelation of an art scholarship. The announcement came during the annual summer solstice celebration at Stonehenge on the UTPB campus Saturday morning. Details have not been worked out yet, but the scholarship will be aimed at students who want to study art. Richard Dick Gillum said it was a great honor. My wife, Iola, had no idea. I had no idea. I'm just overwhelmed, and I appreciate it so much, Gillum said in a phone interview Monday. He added that a big part of the history of Odessa is how the community supports the UTPB Art Department and the university. UTPB Vice President of Advancement Wendell Snodgrass said he needs to meet with Gillum this week to discuss what to call the scholarship and other specifics. This week, I'll meet with Dick and go over what we call a protocol for the scholarship, and he will let us know what, if any, preferences he will have. I know that he wants to have an art scholarship, but I don't know for sure whether he wants to make it for Ector County or ECISD. Those are the type of questions that we need to find out later this week, and once that happens, We will then create an agreement with him, and we send that off to the UT system, and then the money is invested in UTIMCO, UTIMCO, the University of Texas, Texas A&M Investment Company. UTIMCO is our investment arm for the UT system and also Texas A&M. From that, we will then use the earnings off of that to pay for the scholarship going forward, Snodgrass said. Snodgrass added that the Gillums have been wonderful benefactors to UTPB over the years. When I was approached by John Landgraf and Peggy Dean about this opportunity, it was well-timed, as Dick has done so much for this community, and it's wonderful that the community is giving back and in his name, Snodgrass said. When you think about how many students this is going to impact over many, many, many years, it will impact a lot of lives and also their families, he added. Landgraf said he, Dean, and many other people raised funds for the scholarship. At the point he was interviewed last week, the fund was just short of $50,000. I think the most interesting thing, the thing that I envision, is because of Dick's love of the arts and his commitment to give back to the community, this will hopefully instill that same type of love and appreciation to the arts in a student at UTPB, Landgraf said. Almost 40 people contributed to the scholarship, and they had just been working on it for about 30 days. Landgraf said he and Gillum have been friends for many years and have worked on projects together. I'm not very artistically talented, but we've helped him and contributed to some of them and just have known Dick for quite a few years. In fact, I live in a house that he built in 1968, but it's just a coincidence, Landgraf said. Previous coverage of Gillum, tinyurl.com/y9az33lx. Arts and projects from Gillum, tinyurl.com/y8q9mc3g. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County confirmed cases, 359. Ector County negative, 3,982 out of 4,841 tested, with 500 pending. 7 deaths. Midland County, 417 confirmed, 13 deaths. Texas, 114,881 confirmed, with 1,767,701 tested. Total Texas deaths, 2,192. U.S. cases, 2,275,645 total confirmed, and 119,923 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tztrjlf. Quick hits. Party on the Patio. The Shack in the Back, 11610 West Business 20 East, Midland, has scheduled Party on the Patio each Wednesday. Doors open at 5 p.m. For reservations, text or call 349-3857 or visit shackinthaback.com. Informational session. CASA of the Permian Basin Area Incorporated has scheduled an online informational session on how to become a CASA advocate from 6 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. Wednesday at tinyurl.com/y8w652 OJ. For more information, call 498-4174 or visit CASAPBA, that's CASAPBA.org. Summer Art Camp, Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, has scheduled summer art camp and activities for children ages 6 through 12 from 9:15 a.m. to noon Saturday through July 31st and August 3 through 7. Activities include ceramics and art imagination, painting and 3D design, ENAM Art Club and art for public places, and art to wear. To enroll or for information, call 550-9696 or visit noelartmuseum.org. Virtual Reading Program. The Ector County Library has scheduled a virtual summer reading program through July 24th. For more information, call 332-0633, extension 2124. Visit ector.lib.tx.us/children's. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, June 23rd, 2020. Opinion. The Texas Rangers have a nasty history. The injustices of the present are forcing a confrontation with our past. A past wreathed in nostalgia and myths that concealed grim realities. The Civil War ended 155 years ago, but only recently have Americans begun renouncing flags, statues, and monuments, paying homage to the Southern traitors. Other symbols of racist oppression are also under attack. Lately, the movement has gained momentum. A committee in the Republican-controlled Senate voted to strip the names of Confederate generals from Army bases. Protesters in Richmond pulled down statues of Jefferson Davis and Christopher Columbus. The city of Albuquerque, New Mexico, has removed a statue of a Spanish conquistador. In Texas, the shift has put one of the world's most storied law enforcement agencies under harsh scrutiny. City and airport officials recently removed a statue that had stood at Love Field since 1962 of a Texas Ranger. The Rangers have always been widely revered in my native state. We learned they were fearless guardians of civilization whose exploits went back to when settlers were fighting Comanche warriors. They were immortalized in Larry McMurtry's novel Lonesome Dove. There was a TV series that starred Chuck Norris. The Major League Baseball team in Arlington is called the Texas Rangers. The legends omit a lot of the reality. A magisterial new book by journalist Doug J. Swanson, Cult of Glory, The Bold and Brutal History of the Texas Rangers, lays bare their long record of savagery, lawlessness, and racism. They burned peasant villages and slaughtered innocents, he writes. They committed war crimes. Their murders of Mexicans and Mexican Americans made them as feared on the border as the Ku Klux Klan in the South. A century ago, during the fighting that took place along the border during the Mexican Revolution, blood flowed like the Rio Grande. The terms death squads and ethnic cleansing would not enter common usage for another 60 years or so, Swanson notes, but that was what the Rangers were and what they did. Later, they were a bulwark acting to hold back racial equality. When black students tried to enroll in the segregated Texarkana Junior College in 1956, angry whites barred the way, hurling gravel and racial slurs and forcing the students to leave. The Rangers stood idly by. The message to racists, said a member of the Texas Civil Rights Advisory Committee, was plain. If you will only assemble a mob or threaten to do so, the power of the Texas Rangers will be on your side to deny civil rights to school children. When farm workers, most of them Mexican-American, went on strike in 1966, some were beaten and arrested by Rangers. An old saying is, every Texas Ranger has Mexican blood. It's on his boots. The revelations in Swanson's book were the impetus to take down the Love Field statue. That decision is a good start in coming to grips with the Rangers' poisonous past. But the baseball club still carries the name of an agency that struck terror in many non-whites. This is not, it turns out, a new issue. Domingo Garcia, a former Dallas City Council member who is national president of the League of United Latin American Citizens, recalls that when the Washington Senators baseball franchise moved to Arlington after the 1971 season, the organization held demonstrations to protest naming the team after the Rangers. "We've been the victims of Texas Ranger violence since the 1800s, he told me. Benjamin Johnson, a Texan and history professor at Loyola University Chicago, acknowledges that the Rangers no longer murder people or block integration. But for most of their nearly 200 years of existence, they have been an instrument of white supremacy in Texas," he says. In light of all this, the name, like the Confederate names on Army bases, deserves to be relegated to the garbage dump of history. It's an undeserved tribute that reflects a widespread ignorance, at best, of the Rangers' malignant past. It may be argued that the team name honors the current agency, not the worst elements of its history. But without the history and the legends, the franchise would not have adopted the name. No one would name a major league team the Police or the Highway Patrol. The Rangers' name is an affront to Hispanics, African Americans, and anyone who favors racial equity. It should be an intolerable embarrassment to the owners and fans. Even the Aunt Jemima brand had to go, and Aunt Jemima never murdered anyone. Stephen Chapman. Chapman writes for the Chicago Tribune, as well as being a syndicated columnist. Find out more. Read Chapman's daily blog, www.chicagotribune.com/news/opinion/Chapman.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.